Blog Talk Radio.
Like request, our flight attendants be seated at this time. We're landing in about 1 minute. Thank you.
It's the CJ Sweat Show presented to you by Guest Reports and Wilkinson Weekly. I want to thank everybody for joining us today. If you haven't already, get over and check out Guest Reports and Wilkinson Weekly. There is big news concerning our show and Wilkinson Weekly. I've been teasing you about it this season. Tonight, the tease continues, and I will get you that news probably at the end of the season. We are working on something big. It's going to make it easier on you guys. It's going to look really, really good if we can get it to work. I don't want to give it away yet because if for whatever reason something falls through or whatever, then you know it's over. You guys don't have anything to look forward to. So I don't want to tease you. I don't want to give it all away right now. But if it happens, which it looks like it's going to, then I will fill you in on all the details at the end of this season, because I just think if we can get this to work, this show, that blog, even the other blogs, if they jump on board with it, this thing's going to be absolutely awesome. And you are going to experience Gridiron Dynasty, I think, in a format like you have never experienced it before. So we're still in the works on it. Still got a couple of tweaks to work out. Coming on in just a little bit, we have Ozball 19, coach at Southeast Missouri. I am stoked to bring him on. Really interesting story with him. So I'm excited to bring him on. We're going to talk some 1A championship race. There's about seven teams with a legitimate chance, believe it or not. We've only got two games left. And then conference championships on Friday. And then this thing's decided, but we still have seven teams fighting for their lives for this thing. And it's going to get really exciting in the next few days. And then we're going to talk 1AA, going to talk some playoffs. I believe there are eight legitimate contenders. One is a little bit of a favorite. I still don't think they're that heavy of favorites. I think if they face the right team, they can lose. Before we get to Oz, what I want to get to is a story, three different stories that I think all apply. They all apply to our game, and they all apply to one another. And they honestly just kind of apply to life in general. We're getting three stories. They all came through this weekend. I was really close to one of them. I almost was at one of them. We're going to start off with the first story. Today, listen, guys, I use Facebook for work, so I get on it every once in a while. I probably don't actually make a lot of money by using it for our marketing. But, you know, whatever. We do it. It's a social media craze. But I got on Facebook this morning at work, and what do I see on the screen? Geno Smith, this is an article from Bleacher Report, written by Adam Wells, columnist there. I'm just going to read the opening headlines of these articles. Geno Smith's tumultuous career with the New York Jets has hit another snag as the quarterback has suffered a broken jaw after a locker room fight with linebacker, and I'm going to screw up this pronunciation, I.K. Inamkapali. The injury will sideline Geno Smith for 6 to 10 weeks. In another story this weekend, and I was 20 minutes from this, I almost woke up my wife the morning of Redskins training camp and said, hey honey, let's go this morning, let's go check it out. But you know, we were Saturday morning, you know, we just wanted to sleep. But I was back in Richmond, which is where the Redskins training camp was. I almost went, decided not to. And then what happened on Saturday? This is a story from USA Today by Nick Schwartz. Opening headline, the Houston Texans and the Washington Redskins are in Richmond, Virginia for a series of joint practices with 1 week left until teams begin playing preseason games. And the two teams had to be separated multiple times after a series of fights broke out Saturday afternoon. Wonderful. And the last story that goes along with this, what happened yesterday? Cam Newton and the brilliant Coastal Carolina grad Josh Norman got into a scuffle at Carolina Panthers practice Monday after the quarterback tackled the cornerback who had intercepted his pass attempt. That story is from David Newton from ESPN. Three stories with four. So we got four dysfunctional franchises and three stories. You know what? The Carolina Panthers, the Washington Redskins, which I'm a huge fan of, the Houston Texans, and the New York Jets have in common? Not a lot of playoff appearances in the past several years. Do you want to know why? It's because they're some of the most dysfunctional organizations in the NFL. The Panthers really haven't been that bad, and I like their owner. But in the midst of that organization, there are some real issues, and you're seeing it right now. You're seeing it right now. The Redskins, I love them. I'm a huge fan. I don't even mind Daniel Snyder. But for goodness sakes, I mean, this crap every year. It's always like this. And you know what it tells me about all these franchises? It tells me these franchises are pounding on the table, making noise because they are scared. They're insecure about the season ahead. What happens every time a guy is starting to realize his relationship with his girlfriend's falling apart? What happens? Starts making noise. Honey, we're worried tonight. Starts getting a little extra suspicious. Starts getting weird. Starts getting really clingy. All of a sudden, it ends. Girl can't take it anymore. Why? Guy gets insecure. The opposite can happen, by the way. Sure can. But it's insecure. And anytime somebody is insecure, what happens? They get really, really loud. It's the biggest sign of insecurity. Did you watch Ronda Rousey and the Argentina chick she fought? Did you watch their weigh-in? Listen, I don't care about fighting, by the way. I could care less about it. WWE is fake. I hate boxing. It's rigged. And UFC just doesn't interest me. I'm pretty sure I just offended at least half of you. But I mean, seriously, I just don't care for fighting. But I will watch Ronda Rousey. And did you watch that fight last week? Did you watch the Argentina chick at the weigh-in? So loud. So loud. And Ronda Rousey had a great quote on it. I can't find it right now. But go look up the Ronda Rousey quote on that weigh-in. Because that, to me, anytime you hear people are loud, all it tells me is they're insecure. They know. They absolutely know. The Panthers, the Redskins, the Jets, the Texans. They get into this type of stuff because they know deep down inside they aren't good enough. You don't get locker room problems when you know for sure you're fine. You don't get fights in joint practices when you know for sure your team's going to be good. You know who doesn't get into this stuff? The Ravens, the Patriots, the Colts, Broncos, organizations with a history of strong success, the Steelers. Now, they may have one or two players every now and then, you know, do something stupid off the field. But you don't see players stand up to Bill Belichick. You don't see Patriot players get in fights. You will never see Denver Bronco players, somebody get in a fight with Peyton Manning. It will not happen. There is real leadership in those organizations. There is no dysfunction. All of these franchises, Redskins, Panthers, Jets, Texans, they're all dysfunctional. I'm going to go out on a limb and say, and by the way, I like Carolina's roster, and I even like Cam Newton as a quarterback. Heck, I think Geno Smith's completely underrated as a quarterback. But I'm going to go out on a limb and say, these four franchises, none of them will make playoffs. Because the loudness tells me all I need to know about the dysfunction in those locker rooms. It just tells me all I need to know. All right, listen, we've got Oz, 19, on the line. See if I can get his mic live. All right, Oz, You can use your real name if you want. You can use your username if you want. But welcome to the show, and thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me. Real name's Jimmy. I don't mind using it.
Okay, awesome. Well, thank you for joining us, Jimmy. Now, I'm going to jump right into this, and I know I didn't warn you I was going to do this. However, I know that you have a son who played 1A baseball at the University of Texas. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Awesome. Now, I want you, if you can, to take us into a really big game he had against Boston College. Can you kind of give us some details on that story? Because I think this is incredibly interesting.
Well, it was a, I think it was a regional game, if I remember correctly. Turned out to be the longest game in college baseball history. Texas won in 25 innings, 3-2, I believe was the final.
My word.
Lasted a little over 7 hours, I know that. As far as pitching goes, he was a pitcher in that particular game, and he came in relief in, I believe it was the 8th inning. I don't remember for sure now. But anyway, he pitched the next 13 and a third innings. The first 12 of those were no hit baseball. And
Anyway. Jimmy, I saw they were no run innings. Are you telling me they were 12 and a half no hit innings of baseball?
Yes. The first 12 innings, I believe, I think it was the first 12 innings were no hit baseball. They got a single off of him in the 13th.
So they go 12 innings, no hits. They get a single in the 13th inning, and then kind of take us through what happens. What happens after they get that hit?
Well, they got a hit in that inning, and again, I'm old, so my memory's kind of blank here. But if I remember correctly, he got out of that inning, and then in the next inning, and I don't remember the out situation. Actually, he got out of that inning. There was a runner on third, and I remember he was on second, and I remember the catcher called for a curveball, and he bounced it in the dirt, and it went to the screen. And the next pitch, the catcher called for another curveball, and I remember he stepped off the back of the rubber, and he basically laughed like, "Are you kidding me? I just bounced it." But anyway, he didn't throw a curveball on that pitch. He threw a fastball or a changeup. But anyway, got the third out. Anyway, the next inning comes out. He hits a batter, and then they get another single, and he's pulled at that point in about the, 20th inning, something like that.
Oh, my word.
Whatever inning it was. Anyway, it was still tied at that point. It went another 5 innings, and Texas finally scored a run. And the interesting part of all that, it was at Texas. But they were the visiting team. So anytime a run scored, it's over.
Because
in the regional, you're not necessarily the home team because you're at your home field. So anyway, it was It was his night of a lifetime, I guess you could say. A lot of people you will hear criticism on it, but he won't trade that night for anything.
Oh, I'm sure. Absolutely. That is incredible. So, like, by inning 16, were you at the game, Jimmy? Were you at the game, or did you have to watch on TV?
Oh, no. I was there.
So, you were there cheering on your son.
I don't remember what inning it was, but he knew where I was sitting.
Okay.
And I stood up and kind of applauded him, and he tipped his hat to me. And I also know a good friend of his was Greg Swindell, who pitched for, a couple of major league teams. And I know he was back behind home plate, and, they've had eye contact throughout all this. And anyway, it was just one of those nights.
Well, let me ask you this. So as a parent, I mean, you get to the 16th inning, and he's been doing this for, 7-8 innings now. What's going through your mind as a parent? I know you said your memory's bad, but do you kind of remember the nerves and the feelings that night?
Yeah, I was sitting next to another good friend of his who's a little older. He's about 40, something like that, a guy he met in high school through the high school coach. And we were sitting there, and I don't remember, again, probably about his fifth or inning or so, I remember turning to him and saying, he's not coming out. I mean, it's just one of those things that you knew it was his night.
So did his arm fall off the next day?
It was sore.
Oh my God.
It was sore. I mean, I won't get into that aspect of it. I'll stay away from that. But yeah, he was sore. And I mean, he was not the same the rest of the year. They went to the College World Series, lost in the final game to LSU, but he didn't have his normal repertoire, I guess you could say. I mean, he went out there and he gutted it out, but he didn't have what he had had up to that point. I mean, it was, and then again, he had been drafted, and once he signed, they basically set him for, you know, the next 2 to 3 months. He basically didn't pitch the rest of that year. So
is he still playing?
No, he was in AAA a couple of years ago, and I think between, you know, girlfriend and real life and everything, he just decided he had enough. He called it quits.
Wow, awesome. Do you remember what organization
he was bouncing with? Back and forth between AAA and AA that year.
Oh, wow.
He wasn't quite having the year that he had had before. So, I mean, the year before, he had a stretch of about 2.5 months. He was at AA Erie where he didn't give up anything. I mean, it was 2.5 months of, you know, probably the best ball you can pitch at that level. But then I think he wore out. And then the next year, it wasn't happening for him quite like it was. And he gave it up a year before he said he was going to.
Okay.
He had originally said he was going to play one more year. But again, girlfriend, you know, life commitments and all that. And minor league life's not a piece of cake.
Oh, no. And I mean, when you're getting it moved around like that, I mean, I wouldn't be able to deal with that. That's incredible. Yeah, so
it's tough. And they don't pay them anything. I mean, if you get anything at all, it's a bonus. Because once you're down there, they're pretty much all paid the same thing. And it's not much.
Right. For sure. So, listen, I don't want to focus all on your son, but I do want to ask this because even though it's baseball, I think this aspect of you being the dad of a 1A athlete applies to our game. Kind of take us through Austin's recruiting. What was that like as a parent? I mean, he played ball at Texas. That's a prominent baseball program for 1A. What was it like sitting down with coach after coach after coach? And I know our game is probably a little off, but how would you compare that process to maybe recruiting in our game?
Oh, I don't think there's any comparison. I mean, real life recruiting, there's times when they can talk to you, times when they can't talk to you. There's times when you can call them, but they can't call you. I mean, that's odd, but if you call them, they can talk to you, but they can't call you and talk to you.
Wow.
So, I mean, I know he had a friend, and I won't mention schools, at another school, and the coach would say to him, call Austin and have him call us. And, you know, they would talk some that way, but the coach couldn't just pick up the phone and call him. But it's kind of odd because my son, he pitched summer ball, but in high school ball, he didn't pitch till his senior year. Well, he had his scholarship after his junior year because of summer ball. And we had a huge plus on our high school team in that we had a kid that ended up getting drafted, I think, in the second round by the Rangers. So there were always scouts and colleges there to see him. So that means they saw everybody else too.
Right. Well, right.
My son had a big growth spurt after his sophomore year. He was kind of built like me. He was short and pudgy growing up. Well, he took that growth spurt, and he's probably, you know, 6'3", you know, solid 190 when he's playing.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, growing up, he's 5'6", and, you know, he's just a little chubby kid, you know, like a lot of them are. So that's why I see parents and I see kids and they're playing now, and some of them will give it up because of that. But you think, you know, once that growth spurt kicks in, you just don't know what's going to happen. A
right,
lot of
right.
the best kids that we played against in summer ball in the years, say, ages 12, 13, 14, they didn't get any bigger. Everybody caught past them. So, it's a weird thing how it all happens. And, you know, that's why I think a lot of the pro draft, to a certain extent, it's a crapshoot.
Right. Yeah, no, I have heard people say that. And I've even heard where certain college coaches, in football particularly, will recruit 3- and 4-star athletes and avoid the 5-star athletes because they think a lot of them have maxed out their potential. So it's
right.
It really
I can
interesting.
See that. And baseball is maybe a little different than football. And baseball, especially down here in Texas, you can play year-round. Well, you also get kids, and I'm sure it happens in football too, they just get burnt out.
Oh, for sure.
You know, we always left it up to him, say, okay, you know, he always said, I want to play fall ball and all this. And I said, well, you tell us when you're done, and we're done. Well, he always said he didn't ever want to play past Halloween. He said, I don't want to keep playing past that point. I said, okay, that's fine with us.
A
lot of people think, you know, kids are abused and stuff, and some are, but I think we came from a good environment. I coached a lot growing up, but we didn't abuse the kids we had. That doesn't mean we didn't have some that didn't have some injuries, but that's going to happen, so...
Right. Well, let me ask you this, and I know this is a little off, but I've heard a lot of different takes on this. Do you think him not playing past Halloween and kind of taking a rest period, it maybe even helped his game versus playing year-round like a lot of these kids do? Because I see a lot of these kids are getting Tommy John surgery in high school. Because their arm is just gone by the time before they even get to college. Do you kind of think him taking a break was a little bit of an attribute to his success?
I don't think it hurt at all. I think the best way to describe that would be after his junior year in high school. You know, all these college kids, they go to Cape Cod, they go to California, and they do all this, and they play more summer baseball. Well, he was a little bit disappointed after his junior year. He wasn't drafted, part of that being his fault. He said, if I'm not drafted by X round, don't bother. Well, they didn't bother. So he basically told the coaches, he said, I'm not going to go play summer ball. I'm going to stay here, I'm going to work out, and I'm going to get stronger. Senior year in college was based primarily on that workout, getting stronger instead of just going playing more baseball.
That is just, it's awesome to hear. I mean, we've had a lot of special guests on, and I don't want to take away from anything that they've done, because we've had some just really fun guests, but I don't think I've ever been this close on this show per se, this close to a 1A athlete. I've certainly had my experiences in real life, but on this show, this is absolutely awesome to have you, a dad of a 1A athlete, come on and really fill us in on what that all process is like and what it's like to be the dad of a 1A athlete. So I really appreciate that. Let's get back to the game a little bit.
Okay.
I know you're in the Ohio Valley, which is just an incredible conference right now. And you know Babs, I'll use his nickname, Babs and Pete. Can you kind of fill us in on your history with those two coaches and your thoughts on how they coach and just your experience and maybe the camaraderie that is in the Ohio Valley Conference?
Pete and Babic, who I think that's the other one you're referring to. Babic's Eastern Illinois and Pete's at Eastern Kentucky. Well, I taught Pete everything he knows. He just took it to another level. I mean, when Pete, I don't remember the conference and how we started, but we kind of met and we side-mailed and emailed back and forth a lot of thoughts and stuff. And again, I think he put a little more effort into it than what I did. And he's, again, taken it to another level. But I've known him for a while now. The same with Jeff or Babic. Jeff, I think he works in Colorado, or he did, and he traveled a lot. And I've recruited for him quite a bit, not since we've been in this same conference, but over the course of time, if he was busy and traveling, you know, he'd ask me to recruit, and, you know, I've done that, and he's looked at my game plans, and I've looked at his, and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So, you know, we've known each other for a while and everything, and, you know, we get along, we joke and everything. But, yeah, that Ohio Valley Conference with, you've got, you know, Coach James and Orange Pace both. I mean, it's like, you know, I thought I'd do them pretty good, and I go in there, and it's like, okay, I can't win a game.
Yeah, kind of tell us, how much of a gauntlet is that schedule? Because I'm looking at your team now. You're in the semifinals last season, thought you had a good team coming back into this season, and right now you're sitting at 7-4, probably still a playoff team, and still maybe even a legit contender for this thing, but you've had three conference losses. How right. tough is this conference? I mean, compare it to your other experiences in the game, in all of Gridiron Dynasty. How tough is the Ohio Valley?
Oh, it's tough. There's no doubt about it. And I like to schedule a few games outside of conference that I may or may not win. I don't think it's any fun playing sim teams. I mean, you know, I mean, I'd rather try to play a human team and see how it goes. Now, I will admit, I don't spend near enough time on this as I used to. But, you know, that's my fault. But, I mean, yeah, getting through that conference is tough. Now, I will also say, many years ago, now, we didn't have a conference quite like this, but I had a D1AA team that lost five games and won a national championship. So it can be done.
That's impressive.
Elliott, who he's been a long time, he was in our conference and on our side, and we kind of flip-flop on winning the conference and all, but, you know, it just depends. You kind of get things going, get lucky. I mean, you never know. I don't anticipate that this year, but keep hope alive.
Oh, absolutely. I completely understand that. It's funny. I think two of my best teams were teams that got knocked out in either the first or second round of playoffs, and then the team I didn't think was going to do well, I ended up just barely surviving and made it all the way to the championship game, and I still go back to that season, and it makes no sense. But it just it's funny how sometimes it can work out that way. So listen, this Southeast Missouri team, I said a few seasons ago, because you came into Southeast Missouri, there were a bunch of coaches coming into Ohio, Kentucky, Illinois, just kind of like that whole Midwest area, and you're kind of at the southern portion of that. How hard is it to recruit in that area? Is it really jam-packed with a bunch of human coaches when it comes to recruiting? Or have you found success in the state of Missouri?
Well, the issue I have with it is I don't seem to have a whole lot within 180 miles of me. I mean, maybe there's more there than I think there is, but, you know, there's, I mean, Babic and, you know, there's other teams within the conference close too, but I thought Missouri would have more recruits than it does. And it's got some, but not a lot. And I probably shouldn't say this on the radio show. I'm not an overly aggressive recruiter. I mean, you know, three or four cycles in, if somebody's on a guy, I'm probably not going to jump on him. you can bleep that part out. I mean, if you're
okay.
I'm giving away my recruiting. I mean, part of my recruiting theory is don't waste money.
Don't waste money. Yeah. I mean, I like it.
I mean, take the D1A teams, depending on where you're at. Some of these guys jump out there on that first cycle and they'll waste no telling how many grand recruiting. Well, depending on where, I've got a Baylor team, for instance. The first cycle, I send out some scouts. I mean, I don't see any reason to try to bump heads with Texas and OU. I might win a recruit every now and then, but I'd rather save that money, and maybe three cycles in, I'll go to California and pick up somebody or something like that. But,
okay.
I mean, I just don't feel like you need to – why waste a bunch of money just to battle a guy for a recruit? I've got Texas in one world, and the Baylor coach this last time, he only had five scholarships, and I had like 15. Well, he chose on the next to last day to – to jump on two guys, one of which was a tight end, and he already had either two or three. And I'm like, if you're going to jump on somebody, make it worthwhile.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
But again, that's part of my recruiting there is don't waste money. So like in Southeast Missouri, that first 24-hour cycle, I'm probably not doing much, and maybe not even the next couple.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Well, let me ask you this, because you are an experienced coach, and you coached Babkick, who I think is still a good coach, and you coached Pete, who we all know it to be excellent, and you mentioned both of those guys. So you take over the Southeast Missouri team. You're in your sixth season there. When you take over a program like that, what's kind of your first strategy going in when you want to build the roster? What are some of the first things you're looking to do?
Well, I mean, I if I'm going to go recruit, I'm probably going to pick defense over offense if I can and build my defense a little bit stronger. I mean, I try to balance it out, needless to say, but I put a big emphasis in this game on defensive backs. I mean, maybe I'm alone in that, but I think they're pretty important. So I try to get some defensive backs that, if nothing else, at least they'll grow. So, I mean, I try to build defense a little bit before I do offense.
Okay. Well, hey.
I mean, if nothing else, if I can stop them, that's going to give me more tries at it on the offensive side.
Well, Jimmy, what you are getting to is something that I've seen in the NFL where teams right now, just to fill up their free safety and their strong safety, they're not even taking guys who necessarily have the most experience. If you look at the Seahawks, they've just got two of the fastest safeties in the league. And you look at some of these other teams, the Patriots, they're just taking fast safeties. And if you look at what they're doing, I think they're just doing it to try and limit offenses and just try and kind of play that bend and don't break defense. Is that kind of what you're implementing at Southeast Missouri?
Yeah, if at all possible, I like speed at both linebacker and defensive back.
Speed at linebacker and defensive back.
I know game instinct and all that, you know, that's important. But I like speed back there if at all possible. Again, it may take a guy three seasons or four seasons to where he's really good enough to maybe start, but he can at least back up starters, you know, coming in.
Absolutely.
But, I mean, you know, that's not always easy to do and, you know, to get speed back there. But I definitely look for it if at all possible.
Absolutely.
I mean, I've probably got 12 defensive backs on my Southeast Missouri team and probably two or three, or at least two of them are probably being redshirt. I don't know. For whatever reason, I just think defensive backs are important.
I understand. I agree. Well, Jimmy, I want to thank you for joining us. I know we spent a lot of time talking about your son, and I appreciate that. It's just so neat to be that close to the action, the real action going on. So I appreciate you for joining us and for coming on for an interview. Thank you, Jimmy.
Oh, appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye. All right, so it was Jimmy, Coach Osball, 19, from Southeast Missouri, joining us on the show. I read that story this afternoon. I contacted Babs, who's actually close to him, Babkick. And let me back up. I contacted Pete. Pete knew the story. Pete contacted Babs. Babs sent me the story. And I read that story this afternoon, had like 10 free minutes at work. And I would just like, my jaw dropped. I'm reading this 12 and a half innings of no hit baseball. It's just, it is incredible to me that anybody could do that. I thought it was so cool. So I really appreciate him coming on. He was a great interview, and he came on. Listen, guys, he spilled his recruiting strategy to you. So I've never had someone come on that was that honest. I love that. I love it when guys come on and they're just completely honest. They're completely forefront and, hey, this is how I recruit. This is how I build my team. This is how I game plan and, you know, do whatever you want with it, but this is how I do it. And, you know, they're just honest. I love that. Will came on. He was the same way, completely honest, told us his strategy. Same thing with SJU Rat. Just a lot of these brilliant coaches who have just, you know, they're in the thousands in the win column, and they come on, and they're just completely honest. You can't beat that. And listen, what I tell people, a lot of people are asking me, you know, how can I be more successful, coach? What can I learn? What can I do better? Whatever. I tell people all the time, just listen to what other coaches are telling you. There's information in the forums that these coaches share. They come on my show and they share it. And then there's even information in the frequently asked questions. You can learn a lot of the game just from that stuff. And then to have a coach like that come on and be that honest with you about his game planning and his recruiting strategies. Guys, you don't get anything more valuable than that. So that, listen, I'm going to send him a thank you message because that type of stuff, it's just fantastic. And then to add on to that, his son was a 1A recruit, 1A pitcher for Texas Longhorns and had that incredible game. It just absolutely awesome. That's one of my favorite interviews that I've ever done. Seriously is. And I've been wanting to bring him on for a while. I just had a chance to reach out to him yesterday, actually, and he said he could come on, which was fantastic. But I am trying to get into the process of having a 1A coach on and having a 1AA coach on each season. So if we get through two interviews in a season and we're doing six shows during the course of a season, that to me is a pretty good season. I think it's a good interview number to reach for. So we've hit Oz. I'm going to try and get us one more probably during the playoff or championship part of the season. And hopefully we can bring on a 1A guy to match what Oz just did, because that was absolutely fantastic. Really enjoyed that. Okay, guys, let's get to the game. Let's get to 1A football and what is going on there. I've said this before. I'll say it again. In our game, the 1A season is the regular season, and the 1AA season is playoffs. And to me right now, the story in 1A are these seven teams: Florida, Texas, Minnesota, USC, Penn State, Boston College, Navy. If you're not in that list, you've got no shot, and Navy, you barely got any shot. I'll be completely honest with you. I was not expecting Florida and Texas to be undefeated at this point. What they have done, they've been absolutely excellent all season long. Those two teams have endured some of the most difficult schedules I've ever seen. And like Texas has only had one close game, and I think Florida has only had maybe two. And it's just incredible. I thought they would both have a loss. Now, Texas, they play Oklahoma. I believe that game is tomorrow. See if I can pull it up here. I believe they play Oklahoma tomorrow. And let's see. Hold on, computer's acting up. Yeah, Texas, Oklahoma tomorrow. That game I think is going to be close. I was not high on Oklahoma to start the season, but they are 10-1 right now. They've played very good football so far this season, and these games, they can be coin tosses. So, listen, BK Drives has dominated this series against Blitzes Coming, but I do think tomorrow's game has the potential for a big upset. Oklahoma winning that game tomorrow is a huge key because Florida and Texas, I think, are the two teams that control their destiny throughout the rest of the season. So for Minnesota, USC, Penn State, Boston College, or Navy to get in, they need Florida and Texas to lose. Now, the good thing for those schools is that Florida and Texas both have very good chances to lose before the end of the season. At Florida, they only have to play South Carolina, so they don't really have a big game left on their schedule. However, they will have to get through the SEC Championship, where they likely will be facing Alabama. I believe it's Alabama. Alabama's only got one loss on the season. Let me make sure it's going to be Alabama real quick. Alabama or Auburn. So Alabama plays Auburn tomorrow. I think Alabama probably wins that game. So you're likely going to see Alabama take on Florida in the SEC Championship. I think Alabama is as tough as a team as any of them. I had, to start off the season, I had Alabama ranked first. I think, I said they weren't going to make the championship because their schedule's too tough. They've only got one loss. I think Alabama-Florida is going to be a great game. If that's the SEC Championship, that will be a great game. I originally picked Minnesota and USC to play in the championship game. Minnesota is going to play Penn State in the Big Ten Championship, most likely, unless Penn State loses to Notre Dame. I still think, guys, Florida is going to drop a game. And Texas already played Nebraska close once. They've looked like the best team all season long. But I'm still going to go with my gut from the start of the season, and that's Minnesota versus USC. I would love to see Texas get in, but I think Texas having to get through Oklahoma and then Nebraska. Texas actually struggled with Oklahoma State too, so they're going to have to get through Oklahoma and Nebraska. I think there's a loss in there. I really, really do, and that's not any knock on BK Drives. I just think Oklahoma and Nebraska are two very good programs. Nebraska's got one fluke loss to Texas A&M, but that's really all they've got. And otherwise, that's a very good team. They played Texas close once already. Florida is going to be very competitive, but again, I don't think they will get through Alabama. I think Alabama wins that game. Penn State is kind of they're kind of the unknown right now. I definitely didn't expect them to be undefeated. I thought they would drop a game to Michigan State or Ohio State. They do still have to get through Notre Dame. That's a difficult game. And again, they barely beat Michigan State, only by 7 points. So I think this team, as good as they are, even though they're 11-0, I think they're very vulnerable. And I think Notre Dame, I said this at the start of the season, they could play spoiler. And I think that will be an opportunity for them to play that role. So I still stick. I'm sticking with Minnesota USC. Navy's going to go undefeated, but Navy doesn't get in unless there's at least five other one-loss programs. Or if at least there's only one undefeated team. So there can at max be one other undefeated team besides Navy for them to get in. If that doesn't happen, though, if there's more than one, Navy's not in. So I think it's Minnesota versus USC. Although I absolutely love what Texas and Florida are doing right now, and they haven't been stopped yet. So there's a very good chance. I mean, listen, if Florida and Texas both go undefeated, they're in the championship. Even Minnesota beating Penn State or Penn State beating Minnesota in the Big Ten championship, I don't think will be enough to plunge them ahead of Texas or Florida. So my mind, Texas plays Florida if both those teams go undefeated, but I don't think they do. I'm taking Minnesota versus USC. All right, let's jump over here to 1AA. 1AA has gone about like I thought it would. It's completely wide open. There's one team that has a small advantage. That is Jacksonville State. I do think after what we've seen this season, this team is the best team in the country. But I also think they're very, very mortal. I don't think this team getting to the championship is a lock. I think they're going to have to fight just like every other team. Today they played Eastern Kentucky at halftime. That score was 17-7. They only ended up beating Eastern Kentucky 31-17. And I like Pete and I like that roster, but that's not the most competitive team in the country. There's a lot more. There's a lot of teams with more talent. Jacksonville State played a close first half with Villanova. They played a close game with Tennessee Tech. And then that game today, they still have Southeast Missouri at the end of the season. Now, I do think Jacksonville State, again, is the best team in the country, but I think it's a very slim margin that they are the best by. There are only seven other teams that I think have a legitimate chance to contend for the title. Those teams are Coastal Carolina. Listen, I think this team is absolutely incredible with what they have done all season long. Their only loss is to Holy Cross. It was by 7 points. I think if they get a rematch in that game, they would win. If you gave Jacksonville State the schedule, I think Jacksonville State would be a one-loss program as well, which is why I think Holy Cross can really contend for this thing. And I think Robbie's one of the better coaches in the game. If they get through Jacksonville at the end of the season, then this team's going to be absolutely be on fire. So I think Coastal's in this mix. Jacksonville has been very good all season as well. They lost to Jacksonville State, but they beat Tennessee Tech. UMass, I'm very borderline on UMass. The only reason I put them in, and I hardly ever do this, but the reason I put them in is because they're undefeated. Now, they did beat four human programs. Only one of those, however, in that non-conference play, only one of their non-conference programs that they beat have a legitimate chance to make playoffs. That is Harvard. They also beat Villanova 40-13. I like them because they really haven't played anybody close. They've maybe had a couple close first halves here and there, but that's really about it. I do think, though, UMass can contend for this title. I think they could win 3-4 games straight. If they get on the right bracket, they could find themselves in the semifinals. And if they get that far, they could be a real competitor. So I put UMass in there. Texas Southern, I think has a legitimate chance as well. This is another team that I don't love because I'm just not crazy about this roster. I'm not crazy about this roster. I'm really not crazy about their formation IQ. That to me still is a big problem for me in liking this team. They do have one loss on the season. It is to borderline playoff team Southern Illinois, which to me is a big questionable loss. But they beat Alabama A&M. They beat Grambling State. They beat Youngstown State. They beat Harvard. So those are four playoff teams right there. So I look at Texas Southern. I see a team that's played a team they would likely face in the first round, a team they could face in the second round, and a team they could face in the quarterfinals, and they've beaten three of them. So I like what they have put together on their resume. I don't like the loss to Southern Illinois. I thought that team would be down heading into the season. They most certainly have been, and they're a borderline playoff team at best right now. So that, to me, is the really big loss on Texas Southern's resume that's kind of holding me back. I do really like Duquesne. I don't know if I should like this team. I'll tell you what this team feels like to me. I loved last season at the start of the season. I loved Colin Kaepernick. By the end of the season, I couldn't stand him. It's one of those things where I know everybody else isn't really caring for him, but I see Duquesne, and I just see a great program. They beat Columbia 38-13. They beat Holy Cross 30-21. They haven't had anybody in their conference play yet, but I'm looking at this team, guys, right now. Columbia is a real playoff team. That's a very competitive program, as is Holy Cross. Columbia's got wins against Yale. Holy Cross has big wins. Both of those teams are 9-2, and Duquesne beat both of them, and neither one of those games was a single possession ball game. So that to me is impressive. They beat a very good Columbia team 38-13. I think Duquesne has as much of a shot as anybody to compete for this title. The other team that I like, and you know, there's the curse. I know about it, but I can't get over it. I like Northern Iowa. Their only loss was to Alabama A&M, and that was in overtime. I could deal with that. They crushed Eastern Illinois. They crushed Southern Illinois. They crushed Southeastern Louisiana. Even though Southern Illinois is down, they have crushed three very good programs, and they've crushed three very good coaches, and they've got one loss in overtime to what I think is a very good team. And I think if Northern Iowa played Alabama A&M again, Northern Iowa would pick up the win. So I like that team a lot. I think they're going to be scary to play. I think if Jacksonville State matches up with Northern Iowa in that second round, I would pick Northern Iowa to pick up the upset. I like the way they match up with a lot of these elite programs. I really like what Gimpy has done. I think he's one of the better coaches out there. And this roster, to me, coming into the season, I said this team is absolutely built for a legitimate run. They are looking the part right now. Now, watch how this team finishes off the season and if they can win the Gateway Conference, which I think they will. Holy Cross is the last team I think can contend for the title. Holy Cross has lost to Duquesne by 7. They lost to Columbia by 17. Don't like that. However, they did beat San Diego. That's a good program. They did beat Coastal Carolina, which is a very good program. And they ran all over Austin Peay, which is another good program. So they've beaten several playoff teams. They've lost to a couple. One of the teams they beat was Coastal Carolina, who I think is an absolutely incredible elite program. So I think if you look at these teams, you look at these eight teams, I think if you match them up with each other, you get a bunch of coin flip games. I don't think you've got two teams in this mix of eight that would be guaranteed to win 10 games over one of the other teams. Okay, so that to me tells me these teams are very, very even. Jacksonville State has an ever so slight edge. An ever so slight edge. I'm picking, though, for my championship game, I'm going to pick Coastal Carolina. I think they will play. I really, guys, this is crazy. I think they're going to play Duquesne in the championship. I really, really do. I love what Fear Factor has done with that roster. And the way they have played this season. And my prediction will change, but I thought Duquesne would be a little down this season, mostly because of the formation IQ. It's just not been a problem for them. And Fear Factor is one of those coaches that coaches a little differently than everybody else. But you look at the way they played in this resume and the way they beat teams, I really think Duquesne's got a great chance to make a run. I really do. I think you can take any of those eight teams and put them into the championship game. I don't think anybody outside of that eight gets in, though. Mississippi Valley State's going to be good. I don't think, though, that they will get past quarterfinals. I think they get knocked out early. There's just not a lot, just not enough there for me to like. And I liked Mississippi Valley State heading into the season, but my concern for them was a formation IQ that was in the mid-50s, and I think it's played a big toll on that program. I think Mike Sewell is one of those coaches that needs a high formation IQ to win, and they haven't had it, and it's played a toll, and they've got two losses. And that defense, it's, you know, Oz talks about having a great defense. Mississippi Valley State doesn't have a very good defense. Offense is very good. Defense is mediocre. It's a mediocre defense. I think that, to me, spells high-scoring game against a team like Coastal, and I think Coastal would beat them by probably a couple of touchdowns. I really do. And I like Vikes Rule. I like Mississippi Valley State. I think in a couple seasons they could be competitive. By the way, they did play Coastal early on in the season, lost 54-17. They played Jacksonville State early on in the season, lost 43-24. They played a close game with what is going to be a good team, but I don't think is quite elite yet, Texas State. They played a fairly close game with Alabama A&M as well. I look at Mississippi Valley State, I just don't think this is an elite team as the rest of these teams are. I think they're a little bit off the map. So I'm not going to pick them to play in this championship game. I'm going to take Duquesne to play Coastal. I am. So there you have it. I've got Duquesne playing Coastal. Minnesota playing USC in the championship game. What a season, by the way, USC is having. If you want to look at something fun, go look at USC and go look at how some of these games have finished, because I'm fairly certain G. Cal has a couple of more gray hairs, and he already had enough to begin with. But I'm fairly certain after some of the way these games have finished. I mean, that game against California. Let me read you the end of this game, because I haven't had a chance to do this yet, and I love doing this. 47 seconds to go. California takes a 22-19 lead. Okay, let me read to you end drive, because this to me is one of the most incredible things I have ever heard in a WIS game to end a game. So California scores after they go for two, they get it. So there's 39 seconds left. California leads 22-19. Listen to this. 31 seconds to go. James Montgomery scrambles for a yard. USC calls a timeout. 28 seconds to go from the 50-yard line. Paul Powell rushes for 12 yards. USC calls a timeout. One left. 23 seconds to go from the Cal 37. Paul Powell rushes for 16 yards. Now, how they got this off, I don't know, but with 16 seconds left and they don't call a timeout, James Montgomery rushes to the line and completes a pass across the middle to Larry Wiggins for 21 yards and the touchdown, and USC wins with 2 seconds left in the game, 26-22. And that has been G Cal season all season long. Double overtime game against Notre Dame, touchdown game against LSU, touchdown game against Maryland, 5-point win against Michigan. Just every single game. I mean, he has just been on an incredible tear so far. And I think they're going to finish off the season undefeated. And I think when you look at Texas and Florida, those two teams they both have tough games left. And I don't think both of those teams get through it. So I'm taking USC to play Minnesota. All right. I really want to thank Jimmy Coach Oz for joining us today. He was absolutely fantastic. Gave us a bunch of information. It gave you recruiting information, which I would love to bleep out. Unfortunately, I don't have that capability with the show. But he gave you coaching information. He was completely honest with the recruiting. And then talked to us about his son, Austin Wood, who just had an incredible career. We discussed the 1A championship race, the 1AA playoff race. I think it's going to be a blast till the end. We will be back on Friday for our season-ending show, where we will do the selection day show, And we will give you the playoff rundown of the 32 teams that make it, along with the level 4 and level 5 balls. We'll announce those. So selection show is on Friday. Playoffs and balls kick off Saturday. Guys, this thing's almost over. I cannot believe it. Want to thank Oz again joining us today. It's been an absolute incredible season so far. Absolutely fun show. If you haven't yet, go check out all the blogs in the forums. A lot of coaches working their tails off to get you that information. Guys, when I started the blog last year, I had no idea we would be in for this kind of content. We've got like 4 blogs running, one of which is being run by several different coaches right now. We've got the radio show, and then another coach just took over Twitter, which I was completely fine with. And go look at his updates, guys. His players of the week, everything he's done, his predictions, it's fantastic. All of that stuff is in the forums. We are having an absolute blast here. Again, thank you for joining us. Thanks to Oz for joining us for the interview. This is the CJ Sweat Show. Best of luck to everyone in the conference championship games and the rest of the season. Goodbye, everybody.